This ain't Texas.
Matt Rothschild here on the Maggie Dawn Show, subbing in for Maggie, and I'm here with Angela Lang from Block as my co-host. Love that song. I'm playing Texas Hold'em tonight.
I feel like you said that last time. You play it regularly,
huh? Every Tuesday and Thursday night.
Nice.
And I actually went down to Elgin and played on Sunday. My son and I played and won a little bit of money, so that's always nice.
Nice. Congrats.
There was a tournament of 116 people, and both of us got to the final table. So
nice.
That was sweet.
Impressive. Yeah. That's cool.
I don't know if you want to look at my sheet over the years, but it's taken a beating. But anyway, here we are. And if you were just listening to the last segment, that was just a little snippet of a conversation that Maggie Dawn had with Caitlin Henderson, a very impressive senior researcher at Oxfam America, who's the author of a report called The Best and Worst States to Work in the U.S. in 2024 in Wisconsin. Coming in at number 38. You can hear the whole full podcast, half-hour conversation that Maggie had with Caitlin Henderson on the Civic Media page under special segments. One of the things that's so shocking about the state of working people in Wisconsin compared to other places, is we still have that ridiculous, ludicrous $7.25 minimum wage, which is... according to this report, I didn't realize it's the longest frozen minimum wage we've had in our country's history since the beginning of minimum wages. And it's just obviously not even close to anywhere near or half near a livable wage.
I mean, you can almost buy a latte.
Maybe.
That much.
Almost.
Depending.
You can
tip.
Yeah, no.
You can,
I mean, you can't pay rent. You sure can't pay rent anywhere in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
$25
an hour. But people don't need that, right?
I mean, of course not. Housing. It's just interesting because as we, you know, kind of still are in the shadow of Labor Day, I was lucky to be on with Greg Bach, filling in for Jay Matt Nair earlier, and we had Earl Ingram on, and he was talking about how he had a large family. I think he had like 11 or 13 or so children, siblings, like in his family, and they were able to have his mom stay at home, take care of the kids, and dad went out, had a good paying union job, and was able to support a large family on one income. And here we are. I remember when I first started organizing, talking about raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, and people thought that was ludicrous. And that was, you know, over 10 years ago. And if it would have kept up with an inflation, it would be at $20+. And it's just the fact that we have not even made an attempt as a state to raise the minimum wage, I think, is shameful. And I think it's part of just the remnants and the remains of the Walker era as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we need these fair maps and need to get a Democratic legislature so that Evers and the Democrats can pass a increase to this ridiculous $7.25. We're, you know, again, in a minority of states here. A lot of states have increased the minimum wage and we're lagging. We're like one of those southern states. I mean, Mississippi, people were joking about when Walker passed Act 10, but that's what we've become.
Yeah.
And union percentage has dropped by about 50% or 40% since Act 10. There's also something that I think should be illegal in this country, which is forced overtime.
Yeah.
It's true. You know, nurses are forced to work overtime sometimes and forced overtime in other places too. I mean, that is not freedom.
Yeah.
I know Kamala Harris talks a lot about freedom. And she has that Beyonce song that is now an emblem of her campaign that she stole from Maggie Dawn, let's face it.
Lovingly borrowed.
Maggie should get royalties on that. Anyway, it's just you're not free if you're forced to work overtime against your will under penalty of being fired.
Yeah, and also depending on the industry, I was actually just having this conversation in the office today with our team. We were talking about nursing home shortages, and if there is a shortage in trying to pay people equitably and people don't want to go into that industry, there will be a nursing shortage or CNA shortage in our nursing homes. And so how that also plays into the level of care people get. So when people are talking about raising the minimum wage, it's not just so people can just live large, right? It's being able to be compensated so it draws people into that industry and there's higher standards, and that trickles down to the level of care too.
And as that report noted, the best and worst states to work in the U.S., the care economy, people who work in the care economy, most often women, a disproportionate number of women in color, terribly underpaid in the care economy.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, there's not a lot of benefits, and you know, you're not getting paid vacation time, you're not getting 401k stuff, you're not getting anything a lot of times except your wage, and the wage is ridiculously low.
Yeah, and these are folks, like you said, that are doing really, you know, sometimes strenuous work, but also taking care of our loved ones too, or our kids, our families, our elders. And it's just so interesting what we prioritize as a state and as a country. The fact that teachers, even, for example, right, getting off a little bit on a tangent, they are literally molding our future minds of this country and have the success of this country in their hands, and we are paying them terribly. And it's just like, the more responsibility you have, not only for our elders, but for, you know, our future generations, it's almost like the less we pay you and the less we value you under Republican administrations.
Yeah, if you want to join this conversation about labor and work in Wisconsin and why we lag behind so many other states and what needs to be done about it, give us a holler at 855-752-4842. The study we were referring to was from Oxfam, which I thought just used to do hunger reports.
Right, yeah.
But is now doing, and if I would wanted to ask Caitlin Henderson, the author, when they started doing this workplace stuff, but I'm glad they are. She's a senior researcher there who's been doing this study about the best and worst states in the U.S. for the last 5 or 6 years herself, which is an impressive feat. And she talked about not only wages, but working conditions and the right to organize. And of course, the right to organize here has been devastated since Act 10. And it wasn't just for public sector workers, as Peter Barker was reminding us in the previous hour, because, of course, Walker said, first he was going to divide and conquer, and he divided public sector workers from public sector workers, excusing some people in police units and firefighters. And then he divided public sector workers from private sector workers.
Yep. Yep.
Notoriously said, don't talk to me about right to work when he was running for reelection. It's not going to be an issue. And of course, the second he got reelected, that bill landed on his desk and he signed it right away.
Yep.
I mean, he was such a ganef, as we say in Yiddish. He is such a fraud and a cheat, Scott Walker. Good riddance to him. I didn't like seeing his ugly face at the RNC.
So, in conclusion, Wisconsin being 38 on the list is due to Scott Walker, his cronies, and the Republican Party. If there's any question, right?
And he's still fronting for Trump. And, of course, there's Tommy Thompson, who's today in Milwaukee fronting for Trump.
Yeah.
I don't understand Tommy Thompson, how he can look at himself in the mirror at night or when he's brushing his teeth in the morning and have any dignity left, because he's got to know somewhere in there what dangers Donald Trump poses to us. And speaking of those dangers, Liz Cheney made it explicit yesterday at an event in North Carolina that she is not only anti-Trump, she is going to vote for Kamala Harris. We're going to run that brief little clip right now. Thanks, Jess.
Don't believe that we have the luxury of writing in candidates' names, particularly in swing states. And as a conservative, as someone who believes in and cares about the Constitution, I have thought deeply about this. And because of the danger that Donald Trump poses, not only am I not voting for Donald Trump, but I will be voting for Kamala Harris in this election.
There it is.
That's impressive to me. Really is. And I hope it'll make a difference. I'm waiting for others, too.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for her dad, who I hated and still hate and believe he should be
brought
before the International Criminal Court for countenancing torture and overseeing torture
in
Iraq.
There's many things that her dad has done awful, and we know that. But what always just got me was he shot a man in the face, and like, whoops.
And how did he not get charged with
like,
that?
Like, what? Like, sorry, my bad?
Who gets away with that?
Yeah, like, you shot somebody in the face. Like, right. That's why. That was, again, not to minimize all of the other ridiculous, harmful, terrible, dangerous things that he has done. But that just one always just stood out to me as one thing I just did not understand.
It's an example of two systems of justice. That's for sure.
The privilege. In this essay, I will case study.
That is Exhibit A. But yeah, where's the dad on this? Who are you voting for? And I keep saying George W. Bush, Laura Bush. Come on now.
Come out of the woodworks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The old established Republican Party.
Yeah.
That has been thrown overboard by Donald Trump. I know you recognize the threat to our democracy that this guy, Trump, poses. I mean, after all, George W. Bush at the inauguration, Trump's inauguration speech said, this is some crazy, and then a word I can't say on radio.
Yep. I appreciate you censoring yourself. Otherwise, I have to do it, and it's a whole thing.
Oh, no, I saved
you. Fines are probably involved.
I saved your reflexes there, Jess, but... Yeah, I mean, I'm waiting for more decent Republicans, and I know there are a lot out there, and I'm sure there's some listening right now, who will go into the voting booth on November 5th, maybe secretly if, you know, their partner doesn't agree with them, but not vote for Trump, but actually do what Liz Cheney is. I'm not only not going to vote for that guy because he's so awful, but actually because it's so important to the future of this country, I'm going to vote for Kamala Harris, even if I've been a Republican through and through. And you know, we talked about my poker game. I know decent guys who identify as Republicans, but some of them I'm sure aren't going to go in there and vote for Donald Trump either because they understand it too. And it's just important for more and more Republicans of stature. And that's why it angers me so much about Tommy Thompson. I'm hoping that maybe his daughters will come out and say, you know, we're not with Dad on this one.
I think what's interesting and what really struck me by Liz Cheney is because you do see some Republicans that say, I cannot in good faith endorse or vote for this man. But they just stop shy of saying, I'm voting for Kamala Harris. Or, you know, they're just like, I can't support that man. Or so it's like, are you writing in someone? Are you doing something else? But for her to just say it plainly, boldly, it's not, I'm not just not voting for him. I am actively voting for Kamala Harris as well. And I think that's not something you see all the time from folks very clearly distancing themselves from Trump for reasons and, you know, and rightfully so, but they still sometimes can't bring themselves to actually say the thing that they're going to be supporting openly, this first Black woman to be president. And but your vote, when you go into that ballot booth, or if you are voting from home via absentee or early voting and all the different ways to vote, that's just between you. And so at the end of the day, you have to reconcile with that. I know some folks that probably lie to their friends about how they voted. But at the end of the day, I think people really need to vote their conscience in whatever way that looks for them.
And that's why I like a lot of the work that the Lincoln Project's doing. And I admire Todd Alba on the Todd Alba Show for talking as a former Republican. I admire him for having Trygve Olson, who I disagree with on a lot of political issues. But Trygve Olson of the Lincoln Project stressing how important it is for Republicans like him, and he calls himself a Dobbs dad, a Republican with daughters who wants his daughters to have some freedom, to acknowledge that, I'm a Republican, but I'm voting for Kamala Harris.
Yeah. Going back to Tommy Thompson for a minute, we see that there is a comment from Jude from East Troy reminding us that Tommy Thompson's was nicknamed Toxic Tommy by some. So maybe that helps us make sense of why he moves the way he does. Because I mean, and that's the thing, it's like there are times that he has talked about some of the impacts of his own you know, policies and whatnot, and then you think that there could be hope, and then he just falls right back in line. And you know, I would hope that he would understand that Wisconsinites deserve better, and that is not indicative of our values.
Yeah, and part of it may be just a social thing, you know, what are my friends going to say who I hang out all the time? They're all Republicans, blah, blah, blah. You got to get over that.
I was going to say, we're too old to be mad about peer pressure with our friends at this point.
And he's older than the both of us.
Exactly, yeah, no.
And so at the end of the day, he's going to say, I helped Donald Trump win re-election, if God forbid he wins re-election. How shameful is that, Tommy Thompson?
Yeah.
We'll be right back. I'll take your comments about it, 855-752-4842. Matt Rothschild here, subbing in for Maggie Dawn on The Maggie Dawn Show, and I'm here with Angela Lang.
Take it to the flow now. Ooh. Hoops, Spurs, to the flow now. Ooh.